Thanks a lot for downloading this podcast. I just want to apologize in advance for the bad sound quality. There was a fan on my laptop going bzzz, and I didn't realize how loud it was up close to my to the microphone in my laptop. We're not going to record the whole podcast again because the content is really good, but please just forgive the bad sound quality in this one episode. I'll get it sorted for next time. Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Sitting next to me is my girlfriend, Juliana. Say hello to everyone.
Hello.
And we're going to be reviewing Ringworld. Just a quick note, thanks for all of the emails. People enjoyed our episode on Song for Our Bon, which seemed to go down quite well. People thought it was very funny. So I suggest you guys, everyone listen to that one because it's a good fun one. I think you enjoyed that episode.
Yes.
I think it was one of our funniest for a while.
It was.
Even though it went a little bit longer than I expected. And also, people seem to have enjoyed. Last thing that I put in the feed was my comedy album, My Live and Suggestible. It's a free album. So if you haven't listened to the last episode that appeared in the feed, it's not a science fiction book review podcast, but it's what I'm going. It's kind of what I do with my musical comedy stuff, live show. It's good fun. You enjoyed that one, didn't you?
Yeah.
You were even singing on one of the tracks, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So let's get on to today's book then. This is a book called Ringworld by Larry Niven, and I should really bring up the Wikipedia page, which I should have right here. It was written in 1970, and it won the Nebula Award in 1970, as well as the Hugo and Locus Award in 1971. So this is in my continuing, hey, let's read and review all of the books that have won both a Hugo Award and a Nebula Award. And I had this one on my list to read. I was going to read it next. I got it as an audiobook. And I said to Juliana, hey, this is like a classic one. You know, it's a classic science fiction book from back then. It gets talked about a lot. It's still quite influential. You should read it as well. So we went and found, in the bookshop, we found a German translation. Talk about this then.
Okay, so as usual, there's obviously the 70s books and 80s books sometimes. You don't have a German ebook version. Of course not. So we went to the bookshop around the corner, a science fiction bookshop, which also has used books. So I got the German translation of Ringworld called Ringwelt.
Of course.
Really easy to translate.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't mean margarine like Rama does or anything.
Yes, it does. It's just the straight translation. It's not an abridged version.
Like Dune,
like
which we
Dune
had Dune.
And other books around this time, which is also, we really need to check out. If you get a translation from the 70s or 60s or 70s, If it is an abridged version.
But it's an abridged version, but it doesn't say that it's an abridged version. It's just that was the version that they put out in German.
Exactly.
So there was not an unabridged German version.
So in this book, you have this book and the cover is like a big sun kind of thing with a halo around it. And then there is a big spaceship.
Yeah. Don't worry about the front cover. Front covers on science fiction books almost always have nothing to do with what's inside the
book. They just show a spaceship so you know, oh, it's science fiction.
Yes, okay.
So anyway, that was this book. And I started reading it and I read it. But beforehand, I also got the English
ebook version.
Before.
Which we just downloaded it from somewhere, didn't we?
Can't remember.
Okay.
So I was reading the German book and I thought, what a shit translation. Holy no, this was so bad that I actually went across to the English ebook.
And carried on reading
the English ebook. Which also has issues. We were talking later.
Yes, we'll talk about it later.
But first, let's talk about how you read this book before.
Let's just get onto this. You say the issues. You think some of the issues were from the German translation and others were just in the original.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's a good way to set this up. I read this book. The thing is, I just made a note where we were just chatting. It's like, when did you read this book for the first time? And I was like, oh, 10 years ago. But when I used to say, oh, 10 years ago, I meant before I moved to Berlin, because I kind of separate when I read a book into different eras in my life, different sections of my life, and it's sort of like, okay, when I was still at school and I'd go to this library, when I was at college and went to this library, and then in the bit between college and moving to Berlin, where I'd buy lots of books new from bookshops, because I generally have read all of the books that generally in any library that I'd go into, I'd have read all the science fiction books that I wanted to read and fantasy books. So then I'd buy the new books or buy books new and read them, and then lots of books from charity bookshops as well. And then there was a period, before I moved to Berlin, yeah, like after leaving college and before moving to Berlin, that's all in that section. For me, that was always about 10 years ago, you know, from like 98 through to 2005. But now I realize it's we're in 2014, it's like 10 years ago is just before I moved to Berlin.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then there's a period where I lived in Berlin before I did the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, and then the period where I've been doing the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, which now that's 6 years. I've been doing it like all over from the beginning of 2008. So we're now over 6 years of doing this podcast, and that's as long as that kind of gap, you know, in these different eras.
Yeah.
Anyway, I read this book some point between age 18 and 22 or something like that. I don't know. It's quite a while ago.
Which is longer than 10 years.
I think I might have read, way longer than 10 years, yeah. And it's going to get to the point where I'm like, oh, I read this book 20 years ago. In fact, I did.
No,
it's true because, you know, like it's now, I started reading science fiction a lot when I was, you know, like 12 or something. They said the golden age of science fiction is when you're 12 years old or something. Yeah, that's the golden age. Anyway, so I read this book before, and maybe twice, I can't remember. But, you know, certainly once before. And I've read the follow-up books, The Ringworld Engineers and Ringworld Throne, Crown, whatever. I'd have to look at these other ones. I do suggest stop reading after the end of this one, because it gets very, very silly coming up afterwards, even if this isn't silly enough. So, yeah, I've read this book before, and I thought I'll read it again. And I gave it on Goodreads from my remember of how much I enjoyed it last time. 3 stars. And when I finished reading it this time, I'm like, yeah, 3 stars. However, you had a different problem with it. You didn't get to the end, because I finished listening to the audiobook weeks ago. And I was like, oh, when are you getting around to it? But you've been really busy. Like, I've been putting on, you know, we did the juggling, the Berlin Juggling Convention. We went there, which kind of put a dent in reading as well. You were doing some shows, you were performing in an opera, and you had to do all the practice. I was doing other stuff as well. So even though I've gone on and read other stuff, you were kind of getting through it, and it was taking a long time. I was like, well, we need to get to it. And then this morning you were just like, oh, I'm not sure if I can go on, but I want to know how it ends. And I'm like,
No. What did you say? I said, I wanted to know who made the Ringworld and what is the secret behind the Ringworld and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you said, oh, you're not going to find out.
Well, you kind of find out a bit, but not in a way, I don't know, that's not really, like, what the Ringworld is isn't the main story. And
which is weird, because it's called Ringworld.
It is called Ringworld, but I want to get on to what the main story is later. So let's set this up. This is the Ringworld. If you don't know Ringworld, again, it's one of those books where you should at least read about it. You know, it is one of those famous books. One the Hugo, one the Nebula. It's a famous book. The Ringworld is set in an existing universe called the
Known Space,
which was written by Larry Niven. And you have the Wikipedia page of this open. There's lots of short stories that he wrote about the battles between the he started writing in this world in 1964. And there's lots of battles between the humans and the Xin, which are like a big cat kind of thing, with a rat-like tail and big umbrella ears, and they're like yay. And then there's some other aliens that hang out there as well. What are they called? The Pearson's Puppeteers. Those are the three main races that pop up here in Ringworld. Anyway, what else have we got to go on here? So yeah, this is an existing world which I guess started off a few years in our future and continues all the way through, and this is set like 800 years in the future, Ringworld is. So what happens is that the Pearson Puppeteers am I getting that right? Yes.
Yeah.
They left known space, just disappeared, and everyone's like, why? And it's like, oh, well, there's a thing coming from out from the center of the galaxy. There's going to be this big explosion, and the gamma rays are going to sweep across.
But it will be in a few.
Yeah, being in 20,000 years time.
Something.
20,000 years time. Yeah. The gamma rays are going to sweep across known space and kill everyone there. And the Pearson Puppeteers are like, "Well, we're out of here," and they leave.
Because the main feature of them is that they're so
scared
of everything. They avoid the meaning of living is avoiding any kind of danger,
which is a
fun feature.
Yeah, I actually really like the idea that they developed intelligence not to kill other animals and catch other animals, but to avoid other animals. And that is kind of what happens in a way to kind of what has happened to humans. You know, I love this. I read this really great article once, which was the arms race between snakes and monkeys created humans. So in all of the ways that a snake wants to kill a human and a human doesn't want to be killed by a, no, sorry, all the ways that a snake wants to kill a monkey and a monkey doesn't want to be killed by a snake, like, if you follow through all of those to their extreme ends, you end up with humans. And I actually really, you know, it's that quite fun, that is a quite thing, like, humans created fire to protect them from animals because they don't have claws or teeth and or armor or even fur or all these other kind of things. So, you know, it's like, what comes first, the defense, the attack, the intelligence, the non-intelligence, the fire? Does language come first and then intelligence later, or, you know, intelligence first and then language, you know, all these questions. But it's difficult because we have a sample size of kind of one, you know, maybe two dolphins. Well, that gets onto my next book, which is the Uplift series anyway, so I'll get to that later.
Yeah, so let's just start with the three main species.
Well, no, we'll say this setup. So as the Pearson puppeteers leaving the galaxy, they're going, hey, we're getting out of here. And on the way, they see something which they don't understand. It's called the Ringworld, but they're too scared to go and investigate themselves. So they get their crazy Pearson puppeteer, who isn't completely afraid of everything, and they say, hey, you go and sort this out. So the Pearson puppeteer has to go and find some other crazy adventurers to explore what the Pearson puppeteers have found. And he goes and picks up, let's do it, he picks up some people.
He picks up Louis Wu.
Louis Wu.
On Earth.
Yeah, who's a 200-year-old adventurer.
Yeah, he's bored. I mean, when you're 200 years old, I guess you experience lots of things, and then you just... what I really like at the beginning... can I talk about this?
Yeah, talk about anything you want.
It's when it starts, it is him having his birthday, and because he wants just to spend his birthday for 24 hours, he's jumping in these kind of time booths, they call them. So it's like, for me, it always seemed to be like a telephone box where you go in and it's even dialing a number.
Yeah, you type in a number.
You type in a number and then you go to that place. It's like teleporting in a telephone box with dialing a number, which by just thinking now of it, seems to be a bit...
obvious?
Dated.
Yeah.
But I think in the 1970s was probably really like an idea that was like, closely enough to reality that people could identify with it, and then on the other hand it was science fiction enough to make them excited. But looking back now, like, really going in a telephone box dialing a number to teleport yourself I was dealing with it because I really enjoyed the idea of just jumping through from place to place on Earth to celebrate a 24-hour birthday. Like a more 24 hours.
Well, yeah, yeah.
How many hours would it be? I don't know.
47.
47?
Yeah.
Yeah?
No, actually, I'm not sure. I don't know.
I know. More than 24 hours. You can spread your birthday for a long time.
Yeah.
Jumping back and backwards and...
Backwards and forwards.
And so he's the first adventurer that the puppeteer collects for his expedition. And then there comes the Xin.
The big cat guy who's called Speak to Animals because he has
no name.
Not yet. He's just got a title.
Yeah, which is funny.
Once he does something important enough, he'll get a name. But for now, he's a diplomat and he's a speaker to animals because they class humans as animals, not Xin. Anyway, so that's good fun. And the third person, do you want to talk about the third person?
The third person is kind of like, first is a bit... not really sure what her purpose is. She's called Teela.
Teela, yes.
Teela, and her purpose is just that the puppeteer thinks, she is a very lucky person.
Yeah.
They have this weird lottery.
Yeah, like a breeding lottery. Yeah.
Breeding lottery. So, and her family got into that breeding lottery for
five generations
of them. So they're very lucky, and this is why they take her along on the journey.
But I quite like this in because this is what the story really is about. It's about Teela and being bred for luck. You know, it might not be clear because you only, just to say it now, you only got halfway through this book and then stopped reading this morning.
Exactly. I just went exactly to that point when it actually revealed what the story is about.
Yeah.
Which I was then very...
Because it was halfway through and you're like, well, what happens for the rest of the time here?
I was like, why? Why? There are more important and fun things to explore.
Exactly. And this is the problem. Oh, so what they do, they get together and then they go off to Ringworld. And adventure happens. They discover what Ringwald is for. They discover how much the Pearson's puppeteer has been breeding the Kazin to be less, you know, less dangerous, and breeding the humans to be lucky. You know, and comes out of that. But what I like about this is that it's set in a world and that it has a long history. You know, there's like 40 different short stories here that he wrote in this world before Ringworld turns up. So, like, the technology is already established. The history is already established. And I actually really like a complete story that just takes part in that world. However, that world means more to Larry Niven than it does to me. So when we're going, oh, this is a book about, what do you think? Ringworld, because it's called Ringworld. But the Ringworld is the differentiating factor between this book and the other books and other stories within the known space. However, the known space, the humans, the Xin, the Pearson's puppeteers...
Oh, there are loads of guys.
But I'm just saying that that's actually what the story is about.
Yeah.
That it is
but
set
I
on Ringworld.
I don't know them. I don't know all the...
I know, but you were expecting a story about Ringworld.
Yeah.
Ringworld is just the setting for the interaction between...
And the adventures.
No, it's not even a setting for the adventure. Well, it kind of is, but when they get there, it's just a story to play out how the Pearson's puppeteers have been breeding the humans. And when we get to the end of the story, I mean, I don't want to spoil it too much, like what happens, but what the story is about Teela and about how she has been bred in one way. You know, she's been bred for luck. And the story is about the speaker to animals, the Kazin, how he's been bred in another way.
Hmm.
It's not actually about Louis Wu, even though he's the main character. Like, all the way through, I'm like, what's Louis Wu doing here?
Yeah.
And it's just an author stand-in, a cool guy who's old and what is a bit like, oh, I've got to go off and do stuff. And it's really, for me, that is, like, a really kind of weird decision to make. Like, whose story is this? Why don't we tell it from her point of view? Whose story is it? Why don't we tell it from its point of view? Like the alien's point of view. But we have this human male stand-in character for us, the human male readers, and it's such a male book. It's unbelievable. So what else do you want to say about Ringworld?
So first of all, you...
Actually, we didn't say what Ringworld is. It's a big ring around a sun that spins.
I mean, it kind of is implied in the world.
Yeah, but...
In the word.
It's funny, we were looking at the Wikipedia page, it's sort of like, oh, variations have been like this and this and this and this. The real thing is, it's like, imagine a bit of land that is Earth distance away from the sun, so it has the same climate as Earth, but then extend that bit of land all the way around the sun. And you get a ring around the sun, which is, at every point, it is Earth distance away from the sun.
Yeah.
What
I really like is this orbital idea of having an artificial gravity that, because it's spinning, it's like a centrifugal thing.
Yeah.
So it's spinning, and then because it's spinning, it pushes everything to the outside.
Yeah.
Which I really like this idea, but of course...
It's the same as the orbitals.
Exactly, and the first time you've actually mentioned Ringworld to me was when we read Rama.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that book.
Yeah,
and
getting your head around the physics of it.
It is so difficult for me to imagine, like, for what person can actually imagine something that big? Nobody can. And even if you're a scientist, even if you know exactly the numbers and every mathematics and physics and whatever, nobody will ever, no human will ever have the capacity to imagine something that big.
No. What is Ringworld?
Yes.
Yeah. And you can write about it.
But it's still just a thought experiment, which is... Well, it can say any kind of number and any kind of gigantic whatever.
Yeah.
You will just never be able to put it in your head.
And I think this comes from what we were saying about before, like where you go, what are you going to put on the front of your book when you're writing about this? It's going to be a spaceship, because Ringworld is so big, you can't draw it. And all of the pictures of Ringworld, you know, all of the different things, like here, if we look at this... this first edition cover, that's just wrong. That's not what it looks like. You know, that looks like a culture orbital, maybe, or something like that, but it's got a sun in the middle. And there's so many of these other images that it's impossible to express in a picture to humans. Yeah. You have to have a story like this when they're like, you know, 2 months later, they're still traveling, not around it, but just like towards the edge, you know, thousands of years later, this person is still just walking, still just going.
That is totally not any kind of reference, because imagine 200 years ago, people were traveling 2 weeks to go from Germany to the end of Germany.
Yeah.
So this is not any but this is not any relevance at all, because depending on what kind of technology and physics, or like technology and development you have in on Earth,
yeah,
this is what your thinking of distance is.
Yeah.
So, and we're looking just on Google, putting in ring world
into Google Images.
Into Google Images. Of course, you have this all these round.
But this doesn't make sense, because, like they say, he's standing on the wall around the edge. The wall is 1,000 miles high, or 1,000 kilometers high, whatever.
You wouldn't even see the bottom.
No, it's too well. You'll be able to look down and see it, but you wouldn't be able to see all the way across
also,
to the other side.
Every image that you can see,
you
can see the curve, and you can see a horizon. And this is what this book is, the first thing that it's describing. You can't see any horizon
because you're looking through too much atmosphere. There's nothing to see. There's
when you look right, you don't see anything, and when you look left, you don't see anything either.
All they see is like the.
The infinite.
Well, they see the stripe going around the top, but even then, that's too small. It's like looking. It's like looking into the sky and seeing Mars, or looking into the sky and seeing, you know, Venus.
Maybe this is more like it.
Well, even then, that's a bit not quite right.
Why is there a cruise ship?
I know, it's just an idea of this. Anyway, I do like the idea of these ring worlds and orbitals.
The idea is good.
But what I like about the culture orbitals is that it's more kind of approachable. It's like it's something spinning in space which doesn't go around the sun. It just takes 24 hours to spin to create the gravity that we want. And I'm like, I can get my head around that. But ring world is too big.
Yes.
What I do like about Ringworld is the technology involved in Ringworld, where the it's like one molecule thick, and they're talking about, oh, what happens when there's, like, you know, the islands and they go away, and some bits where the weather gets messed up, it strips away, but then there's no raw materials there. They say, like, when society collapses, there's nowhere to dig and to get out more metal and do it. It just drifts to the bottom of the oceans, and then they need dredging out.
So actually the whole idea of it is weird. So what is the purpose of it?
I don't know. I'm not convinced that the purpose of Ringworld. It's like one of those conspiracy theories. Like there's a movie Moon. It's sort of like in the movie Moon, there's a conspiracy theory to make something like this and that. And then you go, but when you actually explain it, it's more difficult to make the conspiracy than it is to just solve it in a more normal, non-conspiracy way. And I think that's what Ringworld, you find with Ringworld, when you actually get to the answer, what is the answer of Ringworld? It's like, well, how can a society have been clever enough to build Ringworld, but not clever enough to make,
to keep it maintained
or to have faster than light travel? You know, she even says that, oh, they couldn't have had faster than light travel to get, you know, because, and to get to it, they had to have the Ramscoop ship. And so, well, how can you make that, but not this? How can it be so impressive that someone who can move stars and planets, like the puppeteers, they're moving planets and stars and stuff, and they can also make ships which can go so fast that they can get to the middle of the galaxy and back again, you know, in a lifetime, like, oh, in a few years or whatever it
was. The thing is, this is so much a human idea of what hyper intelligent people would construct, is that it makes it so human in the idea that humans would never be able to imagine something that a hyper-intelligent species would.
That's the whole point of the singularity.
Because we can't imagine that.
Yeah, this is the whole point about the technological singularity. It's like, once we get to a point where technological progress happens so fast, we can't see past that event horizon. And that's what we have here. It's sort of like post-singularity technology with artificial imposition into our galaxy or into our world, which is fine, you know, for the sake of the story. But once you actually have that, the whole purpose of, like, well, what was it used for? People needed some more room. And you're like, really? That was it? They just wanted space? And it's like, there's way easier ways to create more space, like you say, just the culture orbital or the halo or these other things like that. You don't need to have something orbiting a sun with all this other stuff. If you just have something twist, like, I know it's weird to say, it's like, oh, someone else solved this problem way better, so why don't we do it that way? It's like, yeah, in the future, all of these things would have been solved. Someone would have done the maths and gone, which is the easiest, what's the best solution to this? Anyway.
What I mean, what I like is that Larry Niven, he brought something up, and then of course many people, because they are nerds, got into it and tried to find a better way of developing his idea.
Yeah.
Which then is really funny that he set up a thing that people then went crazy about to then get behind the maths, and these MIT students, they try to figure out how it would work.
From
and
the
stuff.
Wikipedia page, there's so many problems found with it. Yes. He wrote another book called Ringled Engineers.
Which I then really liked, because he put up a thing, a problem that other people then got excited about and tried to develop further.
Well, that's what science fiction is. It's often like a dialogue between different authors. Someone will say, hey, how about this augmented reality, and someone says, oh, how about this with, you know, augmented reality mixed with this, oh, and how about this technology that can be used in that way. Like, now you can just say, like with Alistair Reynolds, he wrote in one book, I think it's in the House of Suns book, he's saying, oh, and they had they enclosed a star by making, you know, thousands of ring worlds around a star to enclose a star, so when it went supernova, it wouldn't get through, you know, because it's such a material that the radiation doesn't get out.
Yes.
So just imagine loads of these things. Yeah. And he just says that. And I really like it that these things do become they become part of the science fiction collective imagination, just to say, over there's a ring world, over there's a Dyson sphere, over there's a orbital, over there's, you know, and we use the Ansible to get, you know, to communicate here and there, which...
And this is what I think makes this a classic. It's not the book itself.
It's the idea in the book.
It's the idea of the technological idea that comes up in the book.
Yeah.
Which I thought would be the main thing.
It's not the main thing.
So what I like is that I'm also currently still reading the follow-up of Pandora's Star, Judas and Chain, where they also have the Dyson spheres. And like, you have all these terms coming up in different science fiction books.
Well, actually, they're not quite Dyson spheres, but it is a sphere that surrounds a whole star and planetary system. Yes. Yeah.
I think this is the main thing what makes this a classic.
Yeah.
And when I read the story... And I highlighted several things. I really would like
to read some
of my notes. I'm not very.
This isn't about the writing. We'll get onto the writing in a.
So for example, I found some things which I really enjoyed. For example, the puppeteer, he landed in tripod position. Yeah. I just really like this. The idea of an alien having three legs, and he's a tripod, and he has two heads and stuff, and also thinking backwards now, the name puppeteer just is so blatantly obvious.
What's going on with this?
So they are puppeteers. They take things and move them around.
But I think they're actually called puppeteers in a way, because they have two heads that stick over the top. And if you hold up two heads like this, what am I doing here? It looks like they're doing stuff with two hands sticking up all the time. And if you're a puppeteer, you've got two hands up and dangling stuff below. But yes, different ways of calling that.
If it's not about the bad writing, I have this one thing that I found really fun. The gods do not protect fools. Fools are protected by more capable fools.
Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah.
I really like this.
Is that noise rain outside?
I think it's hail.
Hail. Wow. Some storms coming over at the moment.
Woo. Apart from that, I only have bad writing.
Oh, you've got lots of notes about bad writing that you don't like. Well, another few things that I like about this book. What was I going to say here? Yeah, the fun, I said the fun inventions, fun science and concepts. I just like, you know, the world that's created is more interesting than the story. And the stuff and the technology that they have, I just like the idea of like, oh, we've got all this technology, but they're not weapons. No, they're not weapons. What we have is like the variable sword, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, this reminded me very much of the thing in
talk about it. Say
the variable sword that they have in the prefect.
In the prefect, yes, they have the whip hound. Yeah, whip houndish, isn't it?
Yeah, a whip hound that you can have a thing that looks like a thing, like a sword, and it can transfer in different things.
In different shapes, but all it is is a monofilament wire or something between the two, yeah.
This reminded me of it.
Yeah, that is quite whip houndish. So there's that kind of stuff, and I'm like, oh, we've got this weapon. It's not a weapon, it's a tunneling device. And this is a flashlight, which if you just turn this knob, it becomes a laser kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
And I like the flycicles.
The flycicles are good. However, they did seem to be like magic plot, get out of plot devices, which again, sometimes, like I say, all of these inventions, the Ringworld itself, all of the concepts, the puppeteers, the world, it's all set up. But then the story just isn't the story that I want or a satisfying story at all. So
let's
move on to stuff that we didn't like about this. Good story. There is a good story in this book.
Then the overall idea of the story...
Well, no, it's not the story. The concept of the world and the settings is good. But
no,
the story
also the
is...
idea of the story is that the three adventures,
yeah,
and they go exploring a world. This is like a basic, good adventure story.
Yeah,
everything is good about it except the.
Remember the other stuff that I like. I like that the sun is always at midday and night comes in different ways.
Yes.
You know, with a shadow, and also the floating cities. The sunflower things, you know, did you get to the sunflowers where they fly across the sunflowers?
No.
You didn't get there. Oh, well, that's a pity. But there's good stuff. Yes, so the story could be good, in the end, isn't. And it's an unsatisfying story, I think, mostly because the story is disconnected from the world. And then at the end, don't want to give away what happens at the end, it's one of those times where it's just like the character goes, and I have got the solution. What's the solution to the problem? People ask him. Oh, I will think about it more and then tell you. And it's just like, why doesn't he just tell them? Like, why does he keep it secret until the end of the book? And I'm just like, he knows. And he's like, why doesn't he say, this is what I'm thinking about doing? And the other characters will go, ah. Oh, I've got an idea. How about we do it this way? I've got another idea. How about we do it this way? But they don't do that. It's like the only reason he's keeping it secret is to keep it secret from us, the reader. And that always annoys me when I read that in a book. Like, either, oh, I have an idea, and he sat down to tell them, cut off, and then get to them carrying out the idea. That's one way of doing it. Or it a secret from the characters. Wow.
Oh, my God.
The sky is falling.
Wow.
The sky is falling.
So yes.
That's annoying.
Yeah.
And what else do I not like about it? Anyway, let's talk a bit about the writing, and then I'll because I've got some other major, major issues with the story. But let's talk about some of the writing.
So first, as I said at the beginning, I thought it was just a bad translation of the, it felt like a very much a 70s translation of a book.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, I can't read the translation anymore. It's just horrible.
Yeah.
So I switched to the
English
thing
that you said is like, oh, all the sentences are really short. And I don't like all these really short sentences. This happened, that happened. Then this.
Yes.
This. Word, full stop.
And I thought, okay, maybe the translator just didn't translate the complex English sentences so well.
Yeah.
Turns out it didn't.
No, those very short, basic sentences are in the
original. Which made me actually think for what kind of... reader was this written? Was that written for 12-year-old boys? Or for whatever? Or for kids?
Probably, yeah. 12-year-old boys is obviously
but
who this is.
But then, on the other hand, you have these really, like, sexist stuff going on where you think, oh, really? Would you want a 12-year-old reading this?
Yeah, like, when I read it for the first time when I was 13 or 14, I was like,
awesome.
Now the sexy fun times begin.
Awesome. Great. I didn't. So... let me read out some things. First of all, there were some really weird constructions like, I've never seen anything so beautiful, said Teela, with tears in her voice.
This is what we're getting back to. It's sort of like he opened his mouth in a frown. What were we saying? Like, his mouth opened in a frown. You're like, how can you have tears in her voice? Like, you know, you can have, sadness in your voice, tears in your eyes.
I always think this is like... authors trying to be clever about construction, and then they totally miss it.
It can work if you're overall a good writer. Like, if everything in the book is written in a metaphor and poetry, and, well, layers of metaphor and poetry and all these other things going on with it. But when you...
But then it continues
It just
with,
continues.
From the gizin came not the slightest whisper of motion.
Whisper of motion? Okay. Like, whisper of sound. You're like me, picking out these one sentences. However,
I don't normally do that. But
when
here,
I'm reading a book, there are times when I can read a book and I go, oh, that was bad writing, but it doesn't affect me because the story is good enough, the characters are good enough, the concepts are good enough, that it just lets me get through it, you know? But there's other books. Like, there was a book by Tobias S. Buckell, which is The Arctic Rising. Like, 40 minutes of my review was me just picking apart his language, but I still gave it a high rating because the story was good, the characters were good, the action was interesting. Overall, it was a good book until the last 30 pages. But overall, a good book, and you're like, yeah, this is good. And the terrible language doesn't get in the way of my enjoyment in the stories. However, in this book, it kind of does get in the way. Like you say, you only got halfway through this book.
Yes, also because of the writing. Like the sentences are not complex at all. It's like here on that page, I mark something and I read. It's like sentence after sentence, always separated by a dot. She.
Yeah.
Lewis.
Go, this is the door opened. Full stop. Teela was radiant. Full stop. Yeah.
Oh, Lewis, I'm so glad I came. Exclamation mark.
Yeah.
That city. It's such fun. She grasps his hand and squeezed, beaming inarticulate.
What? Beaming inarticulately.
Whatever that means.
Yeah. It.
Her smile like was sun. Dot.
Her smile was like sunlight. Full stop. Sunlight. Yeah. We don't know. Don't even carry on. We just need to. Oh. It's just. It's
but
just.
What I actually tried to point out here was. He couldn't do it. It's been fun, he said, and kissed her hard.
Kissed her hard?
Why
you
hard?
Can kiss someone hard.
Yeah, like, but in that situation... Oh, yeah, but in that situation, really, when somebody said, oh, this is so beautiful, you're more like, he kissed her soft.
Or yeah, like...
Whatever. This word doesn't fit in the whole situation.
You understand that when an author doesn't know about, like, it isn't good at writing relationships, they just think that hard is the... best thing. Like there a book that was read by reading by Scott Lynch, I can't remember what it was called, it was the follow-up to The Lies of Locke Lamora, and these two characters get together and it's suddenly like, and then it's just loud sex all the time, and you're like, that's not funny. Like, why are they having sex really loudly and then someone else really loud sex and then someone else really loud sex? It's like, why is it funny and why does the relationship mean more because they're having really loud sex? Like, that's not an adult thing to write about, you know?
This is another thing that, like...
You don't have to read out sex scenes if you don't want to.
No, but this is like, of course they have sex.
Presently, Lewis rolled onto his back and Teela impaled herself as she straddled his hips. They looked at each other for a long, brilliant, unbearable moment before they began to move. Well, that's typical, like, not great sex scene writing in a book.
But, I mean, if it is like...
Seen through the glow of a building orgasm, a woman seems to blaze with angelic glory.
Yay!
Yeah,
okay.
Great. Like, what, why, again...
Why is he putting that into that book?
Okay, let me talk about the word presently. When I listened to this as an audiobook, and it was actually quite good fun to have an audiobook, read as an audiobook, Tom Parker is the reader. Now, I'm thinking Tom Parker is Grover Gardner, I think, who there's a few books that I've read by him. He's a... I should type into Google Tom Parker, Grover Gardner. You can hear me Google stuff on the podcast. This is great. Grover Gardner is also Alexander Adams and Tom Parker. Anyway, Grover Gardner, he's a really good audiobook narrator. And it's really great because he can kind of, you know, all those full stops that break it up, he kind of makes it flow a lot better.
Okay.
So I didn't have to put up with quite as much of the bad language. However, when you search the ebook, which I did, for the word presently, I've lost it here. Yeah, presently, around about, it doesn't happen at the beginning, but around about page 290 of the ebook, pages of, 1,000 pages in the ebook. They're small pages in the ebook. He goes, presently, after walking a very long block, they came to an intersection. I was like, okay, presently. That's an interesting word when you hear it once. And then it's repeated 8 pages later. And then another 100 pages later. And then 3 pages after that. And then the next page after that. And then the next page after that. And then 6 pages after that. And then 4 pages. And you're like, well, presently the sun came out. Presently he turned to the lyre. Listen, he said presently. Presently, because he was not the one flying, he began testing his... Presently, Lewis rolled onto his back and Teela impaled herself. We read that one. Presently, yeah. And it's just like this, just the word presently over and over and over again. And I'm like, is that a word that people still use? You know, looking
and
up.
Is it a word you want to use so often?
No, the thing is...
Isn't it also about variety? It just
makes me think nothing is happening. Like, nothing is leading to another thing. There's nothing... It's like... If it had just said, and then this happened, and that happened, later they did this, or whatever, it kind of wouldn't have brought me to the facts that every time the word presently is used, there's a disconnect between what happened before and what happened after, and this comes back to the fly cycles.
Mm.
They have these little machines that they get on and fly around, and they're fun little, you know, cars, flying car things that they sit on. It's like
it
a motorbike.
Of,
yeah.
of the pod race things they have. Some of them are like little motorcycles with roofs on it and like other bits and things.
Yeah, it's a cool little technology, but how many times can you say, presently they were flying somewhere else? Presently they were flying... And And it's one of those things where you just go, ah, like, everything is happening is disconnected. Anytime anything happens, they can just leave it behind. Presently, they were doing something else, yeah. You know. So that's annoying.
I have one more sentence I want to add because it's just hilarious. Yeah. Of course, because obviously they, as you said, they scanned in a paper book to make it an e-book.
I think this is why we have a free e-book, is because it's not an official.
So this is has many, many little spelling mistakes.
The optical character recognition mistakes.
So anyway, I'm leaving that out now. I'm just reading this sentence to you. Two sentences. Speaker called and turned control of the fleet over to Lewis. Lewis flew while Speaker slept.
That was the paragraph, wasn't it?
That was these two sentences. But, like, you have twice Speaker in there and you have twice Lewis in there. And then you have... It's just... You don't write things like that. This is a basic thing you learn when you do a writing workshop. You learn, don't put too often the same words after each other. This is what I learned in school. Come on.
Yeah. And also it says Lotus one time.
Lotus, yeah.
And what was the other one? You found one, it's like they couldn't find the attitude? And you're like, oh, there's another one that should be altitude. And I was like, no, attitude is a thing with flying. And you're like, oh, okay. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
So what else do we want to talk about? We've done 40 minutes here. I've got some to bring back to the story and what I hated most about this book reading it.
Yeah, so let me just say, I didn't go through the book. I stopped halfway through. And you said, okay, just because it was difficult for me to continue because of this bad writing. And I just wanted to read more about what makes this book fun, which is the engineering ideas, the technology ideas. And I just suspected that it's not so much about these kind of things. So I just stopped and we did the podcast. So if it is more about the story, you need to do that by yourself.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
I read the Wikipedia page, so it's not really...
My huge problem is the sexism in this book. It's really bad. And when I read this book for the first time when I was 14 and the second time when I was 18 or whatever it was, you know, whenever I read this book, for me, that wasn't a problem. I knew, even at the time, I thought, well, the sex in this book is stupid. And let me tell you, when we get into the Ringworld Engineers and the next book, the sex becomes like the height of stupid. You know that in this book, they meet people along the way.
Mm.
It turns out on Ringworld, the way that there's lots of different species, they just kind of happen to land on a place where human-like people are.
It's
full. Apparently, it's full of lots of other kinds of things. Like over millions of years, humans have evolved to be big, to be small, to be, you know, strong, and other. And the way that they all communicate, and so they don't have wars against each other, is by having sex. So the next book, or maybe it was the Ringworld Crown, or Ringworld Throne, or Ringworld Children, or whatever it is, Ringworld Messiah. No, that's maybe Dune. Chapter House Ringworld. When it gets onto it, it's just everyone's having sex all the time. You just read, this is stupid. And then, of course, when I went back and read Ringworld again, I'm just like, wow, it's even in this book is stupid. But it's not just the sex that's stupid. It's the sexism that's stupid. You go through and you think, like, it's not only that this doesn't pass the, like, the Bechdel test.
Not at all.
No, it's like, it's sexism in a way which is so... like, so basic to the book and basic to the author's understanding of the role of females or females themselves, which is super distasteful. Like, first of all, Louis Wu, it's not his story. There's nothing to do with him. He just happens to get people out of a situation. Pearson's puppeteer. I'm making it wrong in my head. Pearson's puppeteer, there's only one sex. And it even says, oh, and then he started thinking of him as a he rather than as an it. And it's like, well, why didn't he just think of him as a she rather than an it? But yeah, that's it.
He.
Female or the other sex of Pearson's puppeteers, which are said to be females. That's the way that, you know, Louis Wu, the other sex, the female sex, the non-male, the non-dominant sex, which is called the cult she's, are brainless kind of plant-like kind of things. Well, not plain, but they just sit there and they don't have any... They don't have any brains, you know. And then, guess what? The Kazin, same kind of thing. The Kazin only have brainless females as well. So you've got these two races of only males. Maybe they're not males. Maybe they're just its. Maybe they're just the sex, and then the other one isn't. So that's one way of looking at it. But then, it's like Larry Niven wants humans, females, to be the same brainless kind of stuff. Like, Teela... it's her story. The story is about her. This is her story. It even says very clearly at the, near the end of the book, everything, it comes down to this, like, it comes down to her story and what she needs and what she wants. It's just awful how much it's her story, but she is, please stop reading stuff and listen to me what I'm saying. It's very distracting when you're scrolling through that. It's really difficult to read something which you're going, even the book is saying, actually, this is Teela's story. It's her breeding that it's all about her having her lucky outcome, and we're just along for the ride. You know, that's what they're talking about by the end of the get to the book. And you're like, well, why didn't you make her more interesting? Why did you make her stupid, brainless, but just happens to be lucky? I actually really like the concept of someone being bred for luck. And I think it would actually make some really fun comedy in a scene where at one point the spaceship turns over and everyone's falling and banging their heads and she just happens to fall into the soft couch, you know?
Yeah.
And those kind of things. And you're like, oh, is she lucky? Why does she do this? But she is like a total non-character. The other characters that the female humans that they meet back on Earth are just happen to be, all of them are like, oh, this is someone who used to be my wife. This is someone who used to be my girlfriend.
Yeah.
No female character is a character in their own right, except as an appendage to Louis Wu, someone he used to be married to or used to have sex with. There isn't anybody there. He has male friends and he does other stuff. So, like,
but
they
would you put this as a very much of the author thing, or is it like the 70s? Is it?
It has to be the author, because I was reading these other books. You know, if I go back to I've lost the page. Anyway, I was reading these other books. There was the Dream Snake, and what was the other one? The Left Hand of Darkness. You know, these other books, of course, written by females, but so showing a sensibility of equality and. I don't even want to call it feminism, because it's not even well, it kind of is feminism, but it's just good writing. It's just good storytelling.
And
like,
when the 70s also about more equal.
I need to carry on. I have more to say on this. I have lots more to say on this topic. You didn't get to this point. They meet a female human who is one of the leftover Ringworld engineers, one of the builders of the Ringworld. She's leftover. She's of that race. It's a female, and you think, a female character who used to be a Ringworld engineer. Surely this character is going to be intelligent and really clever. And they say, she was on a spaceship, one of these spaceships which used to go between the different, the Ringworld and different planets, and then come back to Ringworld and go off to the different planet and come back. And they were saying, what was she doing on there? She was like an onboard companion. It's like, so she was a prostitute. She was there to service the male. Yes. And they were saying, and Louis Wu, as the character, switches to this opinion of her so quickly. It's disgusting. It's like, it was just like, well, what did she do on board? She didn't say what she did on board. And, you know, because there's already been, it's bad storytelling how somebody goes away, finds out the story, comes back, reports to Louis Wee. Goes away, finds out more story, comes back, reports to Louis Wee. But every time he comes back, and it was like, well, just check how many males were on the ship and how many females. It was like 50 males and 4 females. That's the oldest profession. And I'm just like, no, this is just, like, why? Like, this is the main representative. This is one of the only females in the book. And immediately she is reduced down to servicing the needs of the male Ringworld engineers on their trips. It's like, there's not even a recognition that a female might not be there just for sex. You know, for example, and it's not even just for sex. If they're not for, I closed the thing here. Let me go back here and look. Look at I just brought up two notes which I didn't make a note of, but I remembered here. So this is Louis Wu talking to Teela. Come on, smile. We need you. We need you to keep me happy so I don't rape Nessus.
And I remember that one.
And I'm like, wow. Like, this is what Louis Wu thinks he needs Teela for, to have sex with, so he doesn't rape an alien. And I'm like, that's what she's along for? That is the reason of brainless females. No, all females are brainless and don't have any agency of their own.
Well, then you.
And only, then they're only
well,
there.
Well, why
to,
do you then need a sentient being? You could just be a.
Exactly.
That's a play doll.
That's what he needs. And then later on, when Louis Wu meets what was it called?
Her name is Haloprilala.
Prill. Anyway, he meets Prill, who is this male. A male fantasy female sex thing like that. So he goes like, he was on fire. If he pushed him away now, he would use force. He must have her. And I'm like, so our main character is someone who only views female as sex slaves and sex functions.
I'm glad
and
I
then
didn't get
when
to that
he
point.
Doesn't, when it gets to the point where he finds someone so great, it's like, if she pushed him away now, he would use force. He must have her. And I'm like, this is really weird. So actually what I'm doing is the main character has been replaced with a guy who only views women as people who will have sex with. And if he can't have sex with them, he's just going to rape them anyway. And if he can't have sex with a female, he's just going to rape the alien because he just has to have sex. You know, I'm just like, well, that's not exactly the kind of character that I want to be spending time with or an author who I want to read more of.
Yeah.
Then it gets even worse. No, not even worse. The worseness of the sexism is compounded in that, at the end, I said this is Teela's story, all the way through Teela's story. She is the luckiest person on Earth, or she's bred to be lucky, and they're just along for the ride, and in the end, her story comes to the culmination of her being so lucky. What does she do? As a female, what is the luckiest thing that can happen to her?
She finds a man.
She finds a big, strong Conan the Barbarian guy with a sword, with muscles, with long hair, who is, you know, virulent. Virulent, is that the word? I'm not saying, like, virile, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, they find this guy, and they're going to live forever together, because they get this potion, and the big finale, like, the luckiest woman in the world, she is so lucky, because she gets a man.
Yay!
That is what the story is. When I was saying, like, the story isn't about Ringworld and it's about this thing, the whole story is, if we breed humans to be as lucky as possible, what will happen is that all the females will be so lucky to find the perfect man. Yay. Like,
good.
Well done, well done, Larry Niven.
It's similar to this idea, the best purpose of a woman is to get married.
Yes, it's not only that. It's not only the fairy tale ending. And they got married and they all lived happily ever after. It's like, yeah, okay, everyone's fulfilled here and there's peace on earth and goodwill to all men. All of that stuff is great. But it's not only that. It's just like saying, if you were to think of the one thing that the luckiest person in the world could have happened to them, like the defining moment in the luckiest person on earth's life, what would that be? Is it fulfillment through meeting a man? Or would it be, I don't know, maybe that's the only thing that you don't have control over that luck can bring out of you. Anyway, when the whole book comes down to that and you realize that's what the story has been about, like, it really does, it just brings down the whole book for me. And I kind of thought when I, like, reading it, I remember reading it from when I was, like, 18 or 20. I don't even know when I read it. I kind of felt unsatisfied with the story because in the end it's like they crash on Ringworld and then they get themselves off Ringworld. That was the story that I remembered. And I remembered, you know, the breeding for luck and all this other stuff. But I didn't actually remember what the story was. Who was the main character? Like, whose story are we reading
so
here?
I actually haven't even got to the story yet.
No, that's the thing.
I read halfway through the book.
But it's the same thing that we had in, what is it, the, not the Song for Abon, what was the other one? The Curse of Treleon, where it's like, who's the story of? The story is actually of the 18-year-old girl, like the young princess.
Yeah.
But we get
but
it
we
told...
we watch it through the eyes of this weird man.
The 30-year-old guy who just wants to have sex with the 16-year-old girl's 19-year-old best friend, or whatever it is, you know, or the 18-year-old girl's 19-year-old best friend, companion. It's like, why? And that was written by a female. So, but why are we... A female author, let me put it that way. But why do we have to have, like, utterly sexist fulfillment through meeting men stories told through the point of view of the middle-aged men,
male
fantasy people.
Maybe I mean, there are ways of telling a story which is totally fulfilling and fun.
Yeah.
Without having this sexism into it. And so many authors put it into.
But this could be an amazing book.
Yes,
like,
of course.
Why didn't all the way through, instead of Louis Wu referring to the Kazin and the puppeteer, why didn't he just call them both she? Because functionally, they're both not he's. Like, they don't, their opposite sex is brainless. There are no functioning agent, like people with agency of those races which aren't, which are of more than one sex. Let me put it that way. Like, why don't they just call them she? And if I'd have read through the book like that, it still would have been problematic. But there, why did the character that they find have to, like the last of the Ringworld engineers, why did it have to be a prostitute? Like, why couldn't we just have some more, I don't know. It's weird. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, have you got anything else to say about this? Because I think I've finished my notes.
No.
And we've been going almost an hour, so we might as well wrap it up there.
Yeah.
With a good rant.
I think it really, I really went into this book thinking would be really good fun to read.
I thought it'd be fun for you to read as well.
Yes, but it's not. Not at all. And I'm normally not really picky about bad writing. And some of your podcasts where I listened to you ranting about the writing, I thought, well, he's just exaggerating there.
No, writing can be this bad.
And it can be in the way of enjoying anything, even if there would be anything, if there would be a story. And I just couldn't continue because of bad writing and also missing story.
Yeah, you really wanted the story to kick in at some point.
Yeah. But the thing is,
I think this is a fun enough adventure for a pulp adventure. But it's got this status of being, because it's such an interesting invention. People concentrate on the invention of Ringworld and don't actually realize what the story is about. And the story is about a sexist would-be rapist degrading women. And I'm not quite sure how much I can separate that from the author. And I know that's weird to say that about Larry Niven, but, you know, reading some of his other stuff, it's, you know, the, sexy fun times and sexism and stuff is not great.
For some people, sex is obviously a very big, important thing.
Sex is big and important for me in my life. But, like, I want to read about, I know it's weird to say this, but I want to read about adults having adult sex and adult relationships, or, like I say in the song for Our Bond, people not having adult relationships, but just having fun. Like, why isn't fun as equals, like consenting adults? Why does it always have to feel so rapey in 1970s science fiction?
I don't know. Maybe they, in that time, they liked that kind of style.
Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap it up there.
Okay. So I decided I'd give it 2 stars.
2 stars? You didn't even get more than halfway through it.
Yeah, but
how can you give a book 2 stars that you didn't you got less than halfway through?
But I mean, I liked something about it, so I can't.
Yeah, again, you like the idea, you like the engineering, you like the concepts, but
it's one
the
star.
Book itself. I'm gonna give it 2.5 stars, or 3 stars. Actually, no, let me just go back to this. I'll do my Audible plug here. Go to audibletrial.com/sfbrp. You can get a free trial. You can get this book for free. I wouldn't suggest reading this book, but like I say, Tom Parker, otherwise known as Grover Gardner, is a really good reader, and he did make this book a really easy read. And I know for a fact that if I was reading it, I would have noted, like, all of that bad writing that you were noting, I would have noted that. But the only bad writing that stood out for me was the word presently popping up all the time. And presently, I made notes of the some of the sexism, or actually just the 2 times where he's either joking about rape or contemplating rape. I kind of made notes of them, but the other bad writing didn't come in. So this is a good way to actually enjoy books which you would like, I'd never get through to the end of this. Go to Audible, get a free trial, and listen to the book, because people, like a good author, can really save bad writing. Like,
no,
really save
a good narrator.
A good narrator. What did I say?
Author.
A good narrator can really save the bad writing of an author. So go audibletrial.com/sfbrp. Help support the SFBRP and get yourself a free audiobook and sign up for an audiobook trial. I do recommend it. So I'm going to give this mainly because of the narration and reading along. I'll give it like 2.5, 3 stars, and you'll give it 1 star, which will balance out. Let's balance it out down to like two stars. Let's give it 2 stars. Between us, we'll give this a 2-star book.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. It's fun to listen to this.
But I quite like the other people on Goodreads.
What do they say?
They are not quite as extreme there, but they say similar things, which what, I really like.
Our friends on Goodreads, yes. Or your friends on Goodreads.
Yeah, I think
David
mostly.
David Sven rated it three stars. Three stars.
And I like this one where he says...
A blast to read.
No, where?
You've got different friends on Goodreads.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody said it seems to be quite dated.
Yeah. I like this. Paul says, Ringworld was obviously good when it came out 44 years ago, but it doesn't have that timeless quality that some other dated novels have. I did not care for the characters' dialogue or the whole bit about luck. I actually did quite like about that. I liked some of the ideas presented, like the construction of the ring and the rationale for why they were the way they are. Overall, it was okay.
Yeah, T.L. Evans, he said, Ringworld by Lara Niven is a classic of the science fiction genre, but comes off as a bit dated to the modern reader, particularly in its portrayal of women.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with people editing a book like this. Like, I should do my own, like, non-sexist edit of this book. Yeah. Everything's exactly the same. Everything is exactly the same. But we'll just switch some genders around and...
Yeah, but the question is, could you take it out without changing the book?
Yeah, like Prill at the end, does she have to be a prostitute? Why can't she just be... Like, even... First of all, she could just be a male character. There's no reason why she couldn't be male. Like, he doesn't have to have sex with her. Like, there is no reason for her to have sex with her. Anyway, I'm
really
just saying,
would be very...
why don't you make her into an engineer? Why does she have to be...
Yeah, because if she would be an engineer, she wouldn't be there.
No, she would be an engineer. She was on the ship. No, she was on the ship. Loads of other people from... There was one of the ships left and came back. And, like, half of the people on that ship got through and were exploring. It just happens to be that everyone else died or got lost.
Oh, okay.
Except the prostitute, and he just happens to meet the prostitute.
Yeah.
He just happens to meet the sex slave on the ship.
So,
like, why is it that the sex slave survived and not the others?
We already talked about that. What I would be interested in,
annoys me,
why so many people rated with 5 stars? What makes this
because
a 5 star
they
book?
They read it when they were 14 years old,
maybe, yeah.
20 years ago, and that's what they do. That's how you rate it there.
Because I don't see any 5 or 4 stars in that.
Yeah.
Even though I haven't only read the half of it.
But. Okay. Well, that's it. Let's leave it there. Next up, I'm going to be doing another one of these Hugo Nebula Awards, which is called Star Tide Rising by David Brin, which I'm actually quite enjoying. It's a slow read, but I'm getting through it. It's a different book than I thought. I'll talk about that. Also, there was on Comixology, another reason why I've not got to this through this book so much is because I've been reading all these free comics. Comixology said, hey, have a free comics every day over the comics reading list. So I was reading some of them, and then I reading through all of the other free comics that have been available on Comixology via the, you know, free comic book day things, and I've been enjoying reading through quite a few of these comics. Not particularly enjoying that many of the comics for their own worth, but I've been enjoying kind of discovering about comics and reading about comics, or at least the kind of comics that are given away for free. So I'm going to do a special episode maybe in a month or so, maybe at the end of the summer, talking about my journey of reading comics over the summer.
That's good.
My
and
comics
at some point
reading
we will
list.
Read some more Ian and Beck's.
Well, that's going to be my next book, so we'll get on to the not Hydrogen Sonata. What was the next one in the list? Anyway, we'll get to the next one in our list.
Yeah.
Which is called Surface Detail is our next one. So we've got four more books to read there. Surface Detail, Hydrogen Sonata, Look to Windward.
That
oh, no,
it.
Three more books.
Yeah.
Okay. So thanks a lot for listening. You can email me, luke@juggler.net, become my friends on goodreads.com, become Juliana's friends on goodreads.com. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge there. Oh, yeah, email me, luke@juggler.net. That's it for now. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.